larger illiquid markets, you can get pretty wide bid-ask spreads, which can affect the valuation significantly. Also, particularly for banks like Chase, JP Morgan, that are very active in selling over-the-counter derivatives, highly structured product. Most of these firms are marking these products to model as opposed to market. The pricing models are very different from firm to firm, particularly in the options-based products. And it's like any market, in order to get a two-way market, you have to have different views on the valuations and the prices. So you're going to get that, and it will transfer through the accounting statements. Again, you know, what our job is to go in and discuss with the firms how they do these things and get a view on how we feel, you know, whether they're conservative or not, and the assumptions that they make and how they do that. And that being said, not all of them recognize 100% of the income into their earnings immediately. Even though they're technically marking these instruments to market, there are reserves that are built in. Many do not feel comfortable booking 100% of an over-counter derivative that's a five-year transaction the first day they book it, because you don't know what's going to happen over those 5 years. So within that, there are reserves, again, that are not FASB defined. The accountants do have to go in and view and sign off on these, but I found even with accounting firms that varies from firm to firm, the aggressiveness or the conservativeness of the firm. So you'll have operational administrative reserves, which are generally an assumption over time of the cost of hedging these books for a long period of time. So, you know, the assumption in creating the operational or an administrative reserve is that if I stop trading this book tomorrow, my transactions will last another 5-10 years, and I will still continue to bear the cost of hedging those transactions for that time period. So I will reserve that income to amortize over that expense period and reserve that over time. The discretionary reserves tend to be more mark-to-model type issues, where it's the models are built internally to price these transactions, and there's an assumption that, you know, we're not sure how this pricing model will react to given market instances over the life of this model. It's sort of a confidence level of our pricing accuracy. And if I feel that, you know, my pricing model, it's a new theory, it's something that we just built, I'm not really confident that over the long run this will give me good prices, I may reserve a certain portion of my income over the life of the transaction. And those reserves are also held back, not recognized into income, but amortized over the life. And some will be released when transactions expire, so that if you're putting on an over-the-counter derivative and it's a five-year transaction, at the end of the fifth year, I may decide, okay, the transaction's done, I've finished, I can now take 100% of that income into market. Some will recognize those reserves when they feel more confident in the model, or the model's further refined. But the one thing that we do look for is that those revenues or those reserves are released independent of the trading function, that the treasurer or some other market, the risk management firm, will has control over those reserves, and so the traders can't play with when the income is recognized.